Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News. Today, welcome back our head of written research, and that is Michael. He's been in Dubai for Token 2049. Those of you that are members and longtime followers will know he continues to pump out all this awesome research on our platform for us, and he's going to give us some more alpha today. So how was Dubai, Michael?
It was good. It was good fun. I'd never been before, so it was cool to go and check it out and see what all the hype was about. And turns out that it's a really wet place, which, you know, what was it? More rain than they've had in 75 years or something like that, and a year's worth of rain in one day. So that was my first 24 hours, and had no electricity for the first two nights in my hotel, and the whole thing was like completely flooded. You needed a boat to get in and out. So that was my introduction to Dubai.
Yeah, and I've heard the censorship over there. You're not even allowed to take photos of flooded streets or anything that makes it look bad. It's like this is kind of this world we're living in now where you can't even tell the truth or show a photo of something that's actually happening because it's against what the government want. It's crazy.
It's mental. I think we've got a bit of that going on in Australia at the moment too, but that's a topic for another day.
100%, 100%. And it's been a year since we did the Token 2049. Was that in Singapore last year?
No, that it was 7 months ago, the Singapore one.
7 months ago, okay.
Yeah, yep. So I thought I'd back it up and go over it. And this one was like, yeah, it was bonkers. Yeah.
Well, I know things were a lot less bullish and it was still pretty exciting 7 months ago. So I'm sure this one was bonkers. I think you want to start with just how bullish some of the speeches were around Bitcoin before we dive into some of the other protocols.
Yeah. So I think the main thing, well, I guess, that I took away from it is that, like, I was obviously thinking, okay, we're very ahead of schedule, you know, all time high before the halving. Like, am I thinking that this is time's going to be different? Maybe I got a little bit of PTSD from the last cycle where, you know, we were waiting for that blow off top that never came. And you sort of think, okay, we're in a bull market, but is this just going to be really different to the point that everyone still experiences max pain? But after being on the ground, and I'll talk about all the different crazy events that we're on, because there's literally like 10,000 people that go to this one event. And then there's like 600 side events all over the city. Yeah, bullish to the maximum. So I think that we're definitely in for an interesting like year and a half still. We might chop sideways in the short term a little bit. I'll leave that one for Kyle. But yeah, definitely bullish. I think we've got a long way to go in the cycle still. And I've got like sort of the narratives that stood out to me from being there for the week.
Yeah, I guess, as you said, maximum pain can play out in a lot of different ways for people. Because if one of the things I'm starting to think is that we're well into the trillions market cap for crypto, it's a mature market. It can become like the stock market where it continues to kind of slowly grind higher and is basically in perpetuity until, as long as there's more fiat money printing, just like the stock market has just ground higher. As long as there's all this currency. And, you know, we've got the Bitcoin ETFs in the US that have been successful. If you've been following along on the little short videos we've been doing on socials, you've seen, you know, Hong Kong approved the Bitcoin and Ethereum ETF. The London are now talking about it as well. So it's this onboarding of countries that have just got even way more money than retail investors and the mature markets and those money market funds and all that that can just continue to get clients in, rotate, rebalance, and we just continue to drift higher for years into the future, which is awesome. But did you want to share your screen and jump into anything specifically? Yep.
Yep. I'll share entire screen. That's what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah. I think that works best.
Okay. You should have me here.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So my favorite person to always listen to here is Arthur Hayes. Like I'm a big fan because he's obviously very well-versed in TradFi, but he loves to shoot from the hip. And he pretty much just called everybody wimps. He used other language. I won't. But he just opens his talk, like just pretty much telling everyone to man up, to toughen up, that we, you know, we've been out here buying dog with hat and all that for the last few months. And then we get a little correction and everyone freaks out. He's like, everyone just needs to chill out. You are not bullish enough. And so I think for me, that was like the great indicator that, you know, he had all of these really interesting like data points to show that it doesn't matter who wins elections anymore. Like they're all going to print money unless you have someone like Milei in Argentina.
Yeah.
Unless you have someone like him who's just going to like cut to the bone, it doesn't matter who wins these elections. They're going to print money. They're going to debase the currency. Bitcoin's going to go higher. And so I think the main thing that I've noticed in the shift, because like I'm a 17, like was my first cycle. So this is kind of my third one through. And I was like noob in that cycle, you know, a bit more well-versed in the next one. And then I've been, you know, really full-time in this now for, you know, several years. And I think there's been much more of a rotation to Bitcoin. And I mentioned this last time that I was on that I think even people that sort of maybe came into the space because of Ethereum, it's like they've really understood that Bitcoin is the premier asset. And I heard it a lot last cycle that Bitcoin was boomer coin and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, people have really like become not maxi, but Bitcoin is now, it is the premier asset and it's undisputed. You know, it's got no challenges. I love Ethereum and I'm going to talk about Ethereum in a minute, but like Ethereum still has competition. Bitcoin has no competition. And it's just like, it's just adopted on such a mass scale now, and it will continue to be that it is the premier asset. So, you know, no one can not pay attention to Bitcoin.
Yeah. Interesting to see your thoughts on Ethereum in a second as well. And I might share some more specifically on that. But even just the other day when we had that awesome interview with Akash, who's developing that stable coin for Botanix, the whole Bitcoin DeFi ecosystem, it's guys like him that were on the forefront of developing in the Ethereum ecosystem that have now, you know, learned what they can and can't do and applying a lot of it to the Bitcoin space. So yeah, we continue to harp on about how huge Bitcoin layer twos and Bitcoin DeFi is going to be. And the bigger that market cap goes to, the bigger these decentralized stable coins can start to replace the centralized ones and the central bank digital currencies that we all kind of know are coming. And it's funny that it's all getting to that point now where the size that they can really make this a fight, just as countries are going to try and push these digital IDs and central bank digital currencies onto people. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you even see it now, like even at the event, 10,000 people walking around and people are wearing like little Bitcoin medallions and Bitcoin rings. Like it is a cult. But just the money that's starting to slosh around now in the space now, you can see some of these exchanges and the booths that they had were just outrageous. You know, the actual venue, absolutely bonkers. It had flooded 2 days before and you walk in and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference that anything had happened. So, you know, crazy, crazy event. Some of these booths, yeah, just the money. And I know what ticket prices are like, and I know what booth prices are, and just an insane amount of money now in the space. So really interesting, really bullish. But yeah, to go onto the ETH narrative, like everyone now knows that Ethereum is not going to be usurped. And like we talked about, like, you know, Solana, like I've obviously got Solana holdings. Like I think that it is going to do very, very, very well. I'll talk about that in a minute as well. But I don't think it's going to flip Ethereum. Like I think Ethereum is going to have its time in the sun. Like it is just such a core asset. And you can, as you mentioned, like with some of these Hong Kong and London places, they are not just launching a Bitcoin ETF, but they're actually going the next step and going to launch an ETH ETF as well. So Ethereum is going to have its time in the sun massively. And some of the interesting protocols that we're getting like a lot of attention here, and we've talked about this in a write-up, but like Athena, there's all sorts of talk here that, you know, this is the new stable coin to watch. Like this is still like a relatively small market cap. It's not in the top 100 yet, I don't believe. But really interesting protocol. Like there's was heaps of chatter about this, obviously backed by Arthur Hayes as well. But essentially what they're doing is they take you long and short at the same time. And the yield that's generated is the stable coin. And there was a lot of early chat that, you know, is this just going to be another Terra? But it is a completely different mechanism. And I would watch this one. This one's going to be big. Like this will be big. That USDE is going to be, you know, is going to become a very, very prominent stable coin in the space. So heaps of chatter around Athena.
Yeah, so for those that haven't, I think we've done interviews or talks on this, and definitely you nailed this one early with the research, but that APY, that yield comes from similar to the rates that you're paying on exchanges to take a position, to go long or short, and the same with options that have that time premium baked in. So if you're going long and short and synthetically you're neutral, and then that you're earning that yield. That's how they're kind of paying that out. But super interesting and great to see people experimenting with more stablecoin protocols and mechanisms.
Yeah, so much chatter about this. And then also Pendle, which we've also written about. Again, this is another project, which I don't think is too... I think they're both sort of like hovering on... Maybe I think 175 and one's 140 or something like that. They rotate back and forward around that inside the top 100, outside the top 100. But... again, massive DeFi application here. So much chat about Pendle. Like when people are talking about ETH, you know, Pendle is definitely swinging in. They've got a whole new website here as well. So if you haven't already, go back and read the article that we've done on Pendle. It explains about how it all works. But two really, really prominent DeFi applications in the Ethereum ecosystem that are getting heaps of chat.
Yeah, and as you said, I think Solana's got its place, and when fees were really cheap, you know, that was the best place to play around and have your fun with the meme coins and whatnot. So if something's really cheap, it's going to get used, and then when it gets used too much, you know, we saw it had it crashed and got full and had outages or whatever. So there's pros and cons, guys. There's not nothing is the be all and end all. Mine's better than yours in every regard. But I still think all the layer twos are going to continue to grow in that ETH space, and all this restaking. It's still, the most exciting DApp platform. And hopefully we continue to get these upgrades that reduce fees, these wallets now that make it so easy to go between the layer twos and show all your assets. So it's that user-friendly problem and onboarding people that we're getting better and better at solving as we head into this cycle, which is great.
Yeah, I think I wanted to start this off just to talk a lot about Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I'm going to include Solana here in a second. But effectively, undisputed, Bitcoin and Ethereum, the two of them make up like 70% of my portfolio. You can't go wrong with these two assets. Solana's now entered that conversation. And I think now from most people that I would speak to just on the floor, or most people that you're meeting, you know, everyone's got a big name tag on at these events. And you roll around and say, what do you do? What do you do? Everyone, like, the default stat now is to either be building on Base or be building on Solana. So, like, Base, massive, like, amounts of fees being generated. I saw a thing the other day of something like 360 million now just from the sequencer is going to the Coinbase company that they're generating in fees. And then Solana just had this massive presence as well with their own hacker house. So unless you have a particular reason right now, or you've like tried different product market fit, most default people are either building on Base or Solana. And so I think that those three projects being Bitcoin, ETH, and Solana, like that's now sort of like your gold, silver, bronze, I guess, as far as what's going to, and I'm going to talk about four other projects in a minute who I'm very interested in right now, but these three are the three that is the dominant narrative.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Like back in 2017, it was Bitcoin, ETH, and Litecoin was kind of the big three we used to talk about. And Litecoin had that important role as a bit of a test net, but it's probably less so now. One that I don't own anymore, because you've got all these Bitcoin layer twos now being able to experiment with the tech, rather than, you know, Litecoin doesn't have to explore those upgrades. And, you know, maybe Litecoin brings out its own Lightning network and there's still some utility, but I don't think that's a very exciting narrative anymore. And just going back to Base quickly for people that aren't aware, that's Coinbase's layer two, trying to build out a decentralized product, even though they're a centralized exchange and it's built using Optimism's technology, which is a tried and tested Ethereum layer two.
Yeah, definitely. And they're built using the Optimism stack, the OP stack. And so they actually kicked back some fees back to Optimism, the OP collective, as a result of using their tech stack. So it's like by osmosis, it's good for Optimism as well. But yeah, they are a definite player. I again heard Arthur Hayes call them, what did he call them? He called them, it's Binance Smart Chain for white people. Just because obviously that whole BNB narrative was like very Asia driven, where this is like very America, European driven, like everyone, you know, Coinbase is like, also Base is like where all the meme tokens are happening outside of Solana. So it seems like those two ecosystems are like really prominent right now.
Yeah. And just another thought to share with people. If governments and the powers that be start to crack down more and more on crypto, it gives the option for Binance just to move more and more to Binance Chain and turn the exchange into more of a DAO, decentralized organization. And the same with Coinbase. If the US go, no, we're really going to crack down on these altcoins or trading or whatever, they can put more and more onto this layer two and say, hey, well, it's not really us anymore, and kind of step around it in that kind of fashion. So that's just important for people to understand.
Yep. I got four tokens that just stood out to me over the week. I went in with my eyes wide open. I'm like, okay, so what ecosystems are at play here? And I think you can kind of tell by who has a presence at these events. Either you're so big that you don't care, and so you don't need a presence, or you're dead, and so you're not there. But so the ones who are kind of in the slot are the ones who kind of have presences that maybe haven't fully adopted yet. Like the Ethereum Foundation is not spending money on this type of stuff. Not in Dubai anyway. Maybe it's some of the, you know, more Ethereum focused stuff in the US. So you can kind of tell who the players are, who has a presence, who's still live, who's actively developing. The four that have stood out to me. So the first one, Toncoin. Now, I've got to put my hand up and say, I'm pretty new here. I'm pretty new to this. for those that don't know, this is the token of the Telegram network. I think it was originally going to be called Telegram, but they got in trouble for some ICO. And so then they shut that down, paid a fine, and then relaunched it as TON, saying it was independent from Telegram, but it's the same thing.
Yes.
900 million users. They just had a massive announcement that they are partnering with USDT. So the founder is very, very like aloof and has hardly spoken ever, but was on stage announcing their USDT like partnership, and they're trying to make an actual financial network, a financial system. And so anyone, like everyone that's in crypto has Telegram. Like it's how everyone communicates. 900 million active users. It's an absolute monster. And now you can go inside your Telegram app and just hit wallet. It generates a wallet for you, and you can now be trading just to Telegram accounts. Like it's outrageous. It's very cool. And I got to admit, I was very late to this one. I kind of didn't really pay attention to it when I first heard about it, like a year and a half ago. But over the last few months, I've sort of started to scale in. I've built a position now in TON. It's still obviously a very high market cap because it's in the top 10. But you know, you think about the total crypto market cap, it's still less than 1% of the total crypto market cap. And so if Bitcoin's going to double, triple, whatever, this has still got many X's left in it. You know, pick your moments, pick your pullbacks. But pay attention to TonCoin. Like, you know, what they're doing is very, very cool. And all of these apps and games and even TradFi, like in traditional business, can all just create these like interfaces inside Telegram where you can, you know, be speaking to your customers. They're very privacy and freedom focused. So yeah, couldn't have been more impressed with what they're doing, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think on a similar train of thought with this narrative, you know, in China, where we have these apps where, you know, one or two apps dominate basically all of e-commerce and everything you do online and on mobile. And we've kind of got Twitter talk or X talking about how they want to onboard more and more payments. And then you've got Telegram. So it's all these huge platforms where everyone's eyeballs are, and they have easy to use mobile apps that everyone's already using that are now going to be integrating stablecoin payments, crypto trading and swapping. You know, so it's just, again, it's just so exciting to see these places with billions of users that are just making it seamless to get into crypto or start trading crypto or generate that wallet, as you say. So yeah, it's all coming.
Yeah, and like a lot of other blockchains as well can integrate into this. So they can create wallets inside like Telegram as well. And so if you're onboarding and off-ramping using the TON chain, or even if you're just in a different ecosystem, but they're creating wallets inside, like inside of TON, or inside of Telegram rather, like is very interesting. Like it's very interesting what they can achieve here.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Things like airdrops. If you were one of the first 1,000 people in a Telegram community, or they can see, you know, on the back end, they can see, well, you've been active in chatting in this group and whatever. It opens up all those different avenues to reward and build what do we call it, like on-chain identity and on-chain experience. Yep. And on-chain proof of what you're actually been doing to help an ecosystem.
Yep. That was my first one. So I got three more. So everyone knows I'm been Polkadot bullish. Now, Gavin Wood, who, just for those to backtrack, I got a couple of interesting points here. So Gavin Wood was one of the co-founders of Ethereum. So he was the founder of Polkadot, but originally he was one of the co-founders of Ethereum. Vitalik came up with a concept, and then Gavin wrote the yellow paper, the technical paper for Ethereum. And he said he did it in a month sitting on his couch. And it was actually originally meant to be a test net, but then, you know, that's what morphed into Ethereum. It was meant to be a DAO. It never actually properly became a DAO. And so he kind of, I guess, got a little bit disenfranchised and decided to, he could see the direction that Ethereum was going to go, but then decided to leave. And he renamed his company, which was ETH Core, renamed it Parity, and they built the Polkadot protocol. Now, I love the tech of Polkadot. Now, but most of the time when I talk about it, people roll their eyes to the back of heads and say it's a dead project. It's anything but a dead project. So you'll see in all of the SEC sort of like complaints that have come out over the last year, Polkadot has never been mentioned once. And the reason why is because they actively went and spoke to the SEC and had like something like 50 meetings with them. And that's the reason why they've never actually been listed. Now they sort of put their hand up and said, you know, we probably were a security at one point, but we're not now. We've morphed into software. And so the DOT token is officially software. And so that's the reason why they've been so quiet. It's the reason why nothing ever took off. They haven't done any marketing. They haven't really been shilling it at all. Like their foundation itself, like fully decentralized, and they cut all the different arms of it. And now they just have this monster treasury where any single person can go to the treasury and can effectively say, I'm going to do this for the network. I'm going to market it. I'm going to do this. And so we're starting to see it right now. There's a treasury right now for Polkadot to be the sponsor of like Inter Miami, like Messi's team over in Miami, and they're sponsoring a Formula One car at the moment. So the marketing is about to go nuts. And at Token 2049, they announced Polkadot 2.0 roadmap. And so for those that are very familiar with the Ethereum ecosystem, how you've got the base settlement layer, and now you've got all these L2s. Well, Polkadot was designed by that from the start, except all of these L2s, which they called them parachains on Polkadot, they are fully interoperable with each other. So you can have a smart contract on one chain, and it can actually call a feature or a functionality on a different chain that's on the Polkadot network. And so it'd almost be like Polygon has a game, but it needs something for DeFi that's on Base. And so it'll like be able to transact on Base and then do that transaction on Polygon. Where right now inside the ETH ecosystem, all those L2s are fully disconnected and actually quite clunky to get back and forward. You've got to go back down through the Ethereum mainnet and back out because they're kind of competitive. Where inside Polkadot, they're fully interoperable. And now inside the announcement that they did of this like 2.0 Polkadot movement is they've effectively sort of decided to, okay, we've become maybe too tech heavy and we needed to sort of simplify things. And so they've streamlined things so that any programming language will be able to work on Polkadot. So Solidity as well. And so you'll have all of these Solidity smart contracts be fully interoperable. They've got a native Ethereum bridge coming so that Ethereum will work with Polkadot and be fully interoperable. And that, it's called the Snow Bridge. And the Snow Bridge will actually be able to bridge Ethereum L2s to each other using the Polkadot chain in a fully decentralized way. So it's becoming massively interoperable with Ethereum. And so it'll almost blend together like one ecosystem. And the last really like interesting point is that they've created this new mechanism where instead of having to lock up, you know, a whole bunch of dots so that you have one of these parachains and you're part of the ecosystem and you've got blocks producing regularly, if you don't need that type of commitment, you can actually buy space on the Polkadot chain one block at a time. So if you're like, say, a weather monitor and you just want to be on a blockchain every hour, you can just buy like a little bit of block, you just buy one block. And so these chains that you can build with the Polkadot tech stack can just run independently and they can just like intermittently just record transactions whenever they want. Or if they're like a game and they want lightning fast TPS, like what Solana is promoting, they can also do that and they can ramp up and they can reduce their block time right down. They can, you know, they can speed things up and just sort of pay as you go, pay more. And so this is super interesting, like the tech that they've got coming. I think it's one of the best tech like stacks that's out inside the ecosystem. Obviously adoption, no, like they don't have users, they don't have TVL. They've been very quiet and they've kind of missed the bandwagon. And so the jury's still out on what's going to happen here with Polkadot, but epic project, very much a contrarian trade right now because, you know, they're still like multiple X's off of their old all-time high. But if you go over to OpenGov, this is the Polkadot network's sort of architecture, but you can go over to OpenGov right now and they literally are the biggest DAO in the world. So their network is decentralized, but so are other heaps of networks. But they're decentralized on a social layer where there's no foundation calling the shots. There's like a $400 million treasury that anyone can submit a proposal to access at any time. And if you own some DOT, you're part of the DAO and you can vote to decline or reject. And this is everything from like network upgrades to like, I want to spend money to sponsor a soccer team. Like it can be from anything. So yeah, very bullish on Polkadot, I think. Very interesting project. Outside of those core ones that I mentioned before, this is my next biggest holding. Yeah, so I do like what they're doing.
Yeah, it's hard not to like things that have got great technology, plenty of money there in the treasury, and you've just described, yeah, that interoperability, that flexibility, the scalability, and the microtransactions are kind of on-demand as you need option as well. So exciting to see if some projects go to integrate Polkadot or just work there directly.
Just a little alpha drop for everybody. Peak Network, we'll have more stuff coming on them. They don't have a token yet, but this is a decentralized, like a deep in play. Also building on Polkadot Network, very, very interesting what they've got coming. So we'll have more write-ups from members on this. But yeah, watch this space. No token yet, but it's coming. And for those that are wanting to interact here, like just as heads up, this is an Aussie team that built this, the Talisman wallet. So this is like Ethereum and Polkadot combined. So you can have all your EVM, like Ethereum addresses, and all your Polkadot addresses in one space, because that was always a friction point. But yeah.
Awesome. Peak. And yeah, DPIN, decentralized physical infrastructure, one that we've noted as a big narrative for this cycle and keep pumping out research on as well. So good stuff.
Two more. Next one was one that shocked me a little bit, is the internet computer. So this is another one where people are like, turn their nose up at it a little bit when you talk about it. But I went to an event with 60 VCs and they were all loving what this project is doing. So when they launched, they were pump and dumped pretty hard. I think FTX had a bit to do with that. I think their token went up to like $600 and then fully just collapsed down to nothing. But even just in the last 6 months, it's done quite well, the token. I think they're a top 20 project right now. And what makes them interesting is they've gone for a completely different approach. So the whole knock on them was that they were just centralized. There was a centralized thing. And that's a very interesting term. They are differently decentralized to, I guess, how you could just spin up a Ethereum node in your house or a Bitcoin node in your house. You can't do that with the internet computer. It's effectively done by data centers. And so this is the spread of data centers right here across the world that are hosting the internet computer. So it requires some pretty significant hardware to run. But it is decentralized, but it's just decentralized by data centers. So still, for it to be shut down, someone would have to go shut down all these independent businesses that are running these data centers. But what they're doing is very interesting, where, like, you can see here on the graphic, like, AWS is the enemy. So their whole argument is that most of, like, crypto is decentralized on chain, but all of the front end websites are all still using Web2 infrastructure. And so you still need Amazon Web Services to access these blockchains, where everything they do is on chain, including hosting the main website. And there was just money flying around everywhere into these projects. I was shocked by this a little bit. Like, I've known people in this team because they've got like a big presence in Southeast Asia. But very interesting how much money is going into this. And they've actually sort of taken that AI path. So like they're, fully on chain AI. But also they've taken the real Bitcoin L2 path, where inside like the block production, they're also running a Bitcoin node on as part of the internet computer. And they've got this CKBTC, which you can, I guess, bridge your BTC over to the internet computer. And everyone's just going to say, why would I do that? And that's a great point. Why would you do that? But as far as like a layer two goes, this is a very interesting approach, because when you move like a token from a base layer to a layer two, it goes into a wallet, it's held in, and it's reproduced or reminted onto that new L2, where what they do here, they, I guess, lock up Bitcoin and issue it as CKBTC on the internet computer. But every single thing that CKBTC does on the internet computer is all still recorded back to the Bitcoin main chain. So it's full life cycle of everything that it does, every swap, every DeFi app, it all still gets recorded back onto the Bitcoin mainnet. And so I don't know how that works. I don't think it's a pure L2, but it's a very interesting like approach that trying to like be that sort of, I guess, DeFi layer for Bitcoin. So another really interesting project.
Yeah, I guess it prevents that rehypothecation of saying, hey, we've actually got more Bitcoin than we minted than we actually have. And as well as that history, you know exactly what it's done with fast speeds, it says there, 1 to 2 second finality and small fees, rather than Bitcoin that we saw with the launch of Runes jump up to what, $300 or $400 fees at one point.
Yeah,
the other day. But again, I like what you said. It's got that deep in that decentralized physical infrastructure. I think hopefully by now people understand that there's no point in having these blockchains and the software, as you said, running in the middle if the websites you interact with them on are still controlled by Google and Facebook and these centralized tech platforms, and then the physical hardware the internet is running on is just all Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud or whatnot. So this is what we mean by when we say we're trying to decentralize the entire internet stack and build a new internet from scratch that's censorship resistant and open to everyone. That's the ultimate goal of crypto.
Yeah. I mean, these guys had, like I said, they had a VC event with like 60 people in it. Everyone's doing deals everywhere. So there's lots of building going on there. So it's another one to watch.
Awesome.
Last one for me, Sui. So again, those that are unaware, this is a spin-off out of the Facebook Libra project. So when Facebook was going to launch its own blockchain and it kind of got shut down by the US government, the teams that were building, they left and they spin off to two different projects, both Sui and Aptos. And they both use the same programming language. Sui is miles in front in development over Aptos. And another really interesting one, they've got a movement going on here. So They've got very fast block speed. You know, there's like a whole, you know, ecosystem that's built around them, and they're really hard going after sort of that gaming narrative. So where, you know, gaming teams can come and build on them. It's going to be very cheap, very fast, all that sort of same sort of stuff that we sort of saw from Solana last time. So they've got traction because obviously people want to speculate. They may have missed Solana and now it's already ripped hard and said they're looking for a 10 or 20X or whatever. But I think Sui will do things. They had a big presence, lots of people chatting about them. And a lot of the time we see it's not about like, you know, what's best. I'm not familiar enough with the actual move, like scripting language, to know if it's better or worse, but there's heaps of chatter around it and there's heaps of people building on it. So another one to watch, I think just outside the top 50, maybe as far as projects go, market cap, but yeah. You know, very interesting what's going on here.
If you want to just scroll back up a little bit there on that website, to where it had the one more, to where it had the ZK login there. Yeah. So this is really important again for decentralizing the whole stack and protecting or owning your own data rather than Facebook or Google owning your own data. And this is something Akash touched on in that interview the other day when he built that digital ID project for the provenance in India and onboarded 50 million users. They used this ZK. So this is a privacy-based technology. You might have heard of ZK snarks and that type of thing. So being able to log into a website rather than every time you go to a new website or app, you've got to give them your email, you know, create a password, maybe your phone number, your address or whatever. So it's being able to verify that you're a real person without giving away any of your data, so you don't get those annoying scam emails and text messages and letters to your address because someone's you know, got that honeypot with all your data that can get hacked. So it avoids all these problems. So all these little these chains and protocols tinkering on these different things that are just really important for people to understand why they're doing it as well. So love that. Yeah,
so very interesting. So that was probably the main ones that all stood out to me from the week. I do think that like it was very interesting just seeing some of the things play out and how everyone was doing what they're doing. Big things happening. That's the thing. And couldn't be more bullish, I guess, from, you know, what, you know, where we're going here.
Well, awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Some good alpha there for everyone. Guys, will continue to sign up if you haven't already for all Michael's awesome written research and to check out all our portfolios on all these different themes we're talking about with the projects we're most bullish on in those individual themes. Otherwise, Michael, we'll jump on and do this again soon. So thanks so much for chatting.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.